Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll chat with Michael Wilbon about analytics, I-95, and United Airlines. We'll talk to Barry Svrluga about the new coach for the Washington football team, and also about the new owners of the Orioles. But first, let's do some commerce.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Mike Litwin moved. Mike Downey moved. Skip Bayless moved. Mike Lubica moved. I moved. Rick Riley moved. Kindred moved. Woody Page never moved, though, right? He never moved. You never moved. Somebody else never moved. Ryan, Bob Ryan never moved. Are there lessons to be learned in this? You've always been happy there.
No, it's just nobody else wanted me.
Well, beyond that.
Yeah. You know. Mobility implies upwardness.
Yeah.
I found my level of mediocrity and dug in.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Ray Ratto. He'll be here all week. Try the veal. It's pretty fun.
It's great.
All right. So, I should say this. I didn't know what to do yesterday. It was the first Sunday without football in like 5 months. I did not know what to do. Now, I ended up playing golf because it was a beautiful day in Washington. It got near 50 degrees with very, very little
bright
wind.
Bright sun. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Bright sun. I played with Kevin Sheehan, who had 87 bets going.
Kip?
Yeah. Kip, who really hits
it
long.
Hard. Big
he
hitter.
Really, big hitter, the Llama. He really hits it long. With Jesse McCollum, who I like very much, and Joe House, who I like very much. We had a lovely time, played 18. Jesse and I won, and by that I mean Jesse won. And I really had nothing to do with it. And we had a lot of fun, and I had no guilt because there was no football, but I didn't really know what to do. Over the weekend, I tried to watch other things. I don't know about you. I couldn't watch the Hockey All-Star Game. It had nothing for me. I couldn't watch the football skills. I didn't care. I didn't care about guys picking up tires and running under windows. I didn't. I watched 5 minutes. I didn't care. Pebble got rained out. I ended up watching the Saudi tour. I did. And I'll talk to Michael about that in a second. Also, by the way, I wanted to mention.
Didn't watch any pickleball?
No, I really can't stand
pickleball. Stay out of the kitchen?
I hate pickleball. I didn't watch pickleball.
You know what I stumbled on last night when I was in wandering the wasteland as you were?
Huh.
Michael Clayton.
Oh, wow. That's always.
You guys didn't watch the Grammys at all?
I didn't watch the Grammys at all because I knew I would know nobody on it.
So I'm at that point now where the question is, do I know this artist? And then if I do, you shout to your wife from the other room, I know this one.
No.
But didn't someone get arrested on stage or something like that?
I didn't stay with it that
really?
Long.
Yeah,
I was trying to watch to see
maybe not
live.
On stage, but there was somebody who won, I believe, 3 Grammys.
I mean,
was arrested that night.
They were
like let out of the building.
A flood to the arena. I mean, downtown LA was under serious flood watch.
Yes.
I would. The only one I knew, somebody said to me, well, Joni Mitchell is on. I said, I don't want to see that. Not at my age and her age. Enough is enough. I don't really want to see that.
So there's one performance you'd like near the beginning where so Luke Combs is a country singer.
I know who
he is.
He
did a cover of Tracy Chapman's Fast Car.
Okay.
And that was a great cover and sort of ended a lot of controversy around the sort of acclaim that his version of that song got over the summer.
So I didn't watch any of that. I didn't really watch anything. I was walking the dog this morning. We had 2 days here when it climbed near 50. There are flowers out.
Oh,
it's
really?
February 5th. There are these little green flowers that open up into a small white bell-shaped thing, right, Mike? We'd call them bell-shaped?
Oh, yeah, bell-shaped.
Weeping,
I don't know what,
something.
Yeah, they seem
I don't
to
know what
they grow
are.
In clusters.
They're all over. All of a sudden. Now, we're going to get snow
I believe they're called
still.
Snowdrops.
We're going to get snow.
Are we?
And, oh, sure. We may not get it this week. We're going to get it by late February, March. We're going to get it. So anyway, I didn't watch Pebble. And I was back and forth. I was talking with some people about Pebble because it was going to be rained out. Everybody knew it was going to be rained out. And I think I was talking with Sheehan about this. Or maybe it was just Jesse brought it up. And I said, well, they're going to have to play it on Monday because they're not going to have a 54-hole tournament when they're being challenged by the Saudi Tour, which the whole thing, LIV in Roman numerals, is 54.
The irony for a 54 no-cut event.
They're not going to do that. And then I read this morning they did that.
Yeah, they announced that last night. And I believe, as I told you last week, it was always going to be a Monday finish. They have a rule that says you have to try and get to 72 holes. But if you get people started in that final round, you have to finish it. And if you think about what the waste management means to their schedule, it's not like you can be sending players out still into Tuesday morning because you have another tournament to put on. And the amount of damage
people
on...
People like the waste management.
Pebble,
they like to watch
yes.
that hole.
So the amount of damage that was done to the golf course and to yes. the general area, they had a shelter-in-place order. So it's not like they were going to be able to get up and do anything until early afternoon in terms of getting people out to play. And it's still winter, so you're not going to be able to play much past 5:30, 5:45.
Speaking of which, the Saudi Tour event in Mexico, they had some pretty big names in that tournament. John Rahm, this was his debut, and he finished second in the tournament.
I think the event was helped by his not winning and right. by his hitting a wayward tee shot to close out his round to make it look like, okay, there is a learning curve or there is a threshold you have to try to meet to win here. It's not just take the money and win your first event.
Sergio Garcia ended up in a playoff with Joaquin Niemann, who
Sergio
was known
or
since, since Joaquin Niemann was a kid playing amateur golf. The way you know that it's not a real tournament in their eyes, Sergio was tied with Niemann for over an hour. Sergio was sitting down feeding apples to his daughter. He didn't go to the range for one shot.
Oh, I don't think that's fair.
What do you mean? Don't
you said you watched the last week, you see Keegan Bradley holding his kid during an event.
But I mean, if you thought there was going to be a playoff, don't you think they'd go to the range?
You might. Go. I mean, you don't necessarily know where someone's finishing relative to the range. You often might go see them chip or putt, but you also have to see somebody else post a number. So,
well, it was they went four extra holes, and it was so dark. And everybody knows what this is like when the camera makes it seem like it's light, but
right.
you get away from the camera and it's really dark. Sergio tugged a second shot on the fourth time up 18. Hit a chip that almost went in, landed about 10 or 11 feet past, and Niemann put in a birdie putt and ended it. And it was, except for the dopey things they wear, like shorts and team shirts, that's real golf. These are good players.
What did you think? So I didn't watch the playoff, but what did you
golf.
Think of when they lit up the billboard to add some light to the green?
I thought that was good.
And I'm just surprised you're so against the shorts. I know issue with
terrible.
The shorts. I just think the shirts look amateurish.
The shirts look terrible. Wearing shorts to me looks terrible. I don't get the team thing at all. I mean, I don't get it. Okay, maybe that's the future. I don't get it. But if that was the only golf that was on yesterday, which it was, and you watched it, you knew the people involved. The three challengers, you knew all those people, and it was... golf.
Right, and even farther down the board, you had DJ and you had Brooks Koepka, which is a reminder of the depth that they have assembled without really making many big splashes other than picking up a John Rahm. Like there's a deeper roster than you'd think.
And what did you think of it when you watched it?
Again,
did it seem like golf to you?
It looks like golf. The hard thing for me to accept as a consumer of golf is the shotgun, which is if I'm watching the end of Pebble, I understand Pebble ends
on
around the ocean. If you have a one-stroke lead, you have to avoid a big body of water.
Right.
It doesn't end on 17, where you can likely hit a mid-iron to the middle of the green and probably get away and protect the lead. Now, that that's different for the course setup, whether it's a par five, a hard, difficult par four. So, and what's nice though is the players are finishing in position. So it's not like you have somebody on the other side of the golf course who is likely going to shoot up the leaderboard. So, but again, the production looked like real golf.
There's a lot of schmutz on the side of the television.
There's a constant buzz, particularly for somebody of your age who's done your career. Like the music that's in the background is just a constant din.
Yeah. And I would say that I would take a guess that the people who were around 18, and this lasted over an hour past the last hole, over an hour. And there were my friend Lowell Singer, his channel in California
cut
away. It's cut away from it. You know, and they said, you can get this. And they gave him some number he could get that seemed to be on the moon. And he just said, I'm not. I'm done. But my guess is the people around 18 were the only people who went to the event.
I would. No, it looked like there was more. There were more bodies stretched around the course. I'm not sure if they stayed for the playoff because, again, you have darkness. But it would be interesting to see what were the actual numbers if you could get a real number, which they never give for LIV Golf.
I think it would be the highest rated.
The replay of the third round on the Golf Channel. Because I'm sure a lot of people just turned it on not
and
knowing.
Assumed it was going live at that point, and it was the Saturday
Now, the bummer
round.
Is, if it were safe to do it, people would have loved to watch PGA Tour players playing in horrific conditions at one of the most beautiful courses that welcomes those. Like even if it was just watching them, you know, hit chip four irons off
there's,
of seven.
There's a river of water.
Oh, it was not safe.
In L.A. as well.
Oh,
And Northern California, like really bad. And if that was snow, it'd be 18 feet of snow.
Well, I'm sure it's snow in some parts of California.
Probably in the Sierra Nevadas, sure. It's probably 18 feet of snow is my guess. So anyway, now that's the Open today. Those other things, I just forgot about them. We'll take a break. Michael Wilbon, when we return. I think he's in Arizona, so I think he has avoided the rain, but maybe not.
Has he had to evacuate to South Scottsdale?
Central Scottsdale, maybe.
It's too hot down there.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is an artist named Ali Farris. And she comes to us via Michael Granberry. And all Michael Granberry's artists are wonderful.
They really are.
And he writes, I don't remember exactly how it came about, but I remain forever grateful that it did. I met Ali Farris years ago at Elk Calvin's Coffee House in Dallas, where her vocal range and piano prowess were something to behold. We chatted, and I learned that Ali was making extra money by tuning pianos. My wife Nancy and I invited her to our house, where we happen to have a baby grand that almost never gets played. No one in our family plays a piano, so let's just say it's a lovely piece of furniture. Until Ali came to our abode and spent hours fine-tuning our sadly neglected baby grand. She needed to test the tuning, at which point she surprised us with a mini house concert. You like Jackson Brown, right? She asked. Then proceeded to play one of the best covers of The Pretender I've ever heard. Thank goodness we still have the video. This is Ali Farris. This song is entitled Jenny, and we will play her again later in the show. She plays in Michael Wilbon, who's in Arizona. The weather in the West, at least in California, is horrific. Is there any spillover to Arizona where you are?
Not yet, Tony, but there's supposed to happen. We're supposed to get that. Like tonight or tomorrow. I know Wednesday, the chances of rain here, Wednesday, Thursday, like 80-some%. So for the desert, that's a lot. I left L.A. yesterday trying to escape both the rain and the Grammy crowds in downtown L.A., and I was able to do that. what I wasn't expecting because it was starting to rain, and everybody knew the consequences that were going to come there. We're in the air, and we're halfway through the flight. It's only, 45-minute flight. And it's like, why is it clear? Why does it just clear up? And we got to Scottsdale, and it wasn't a cloud in the sky. There was not a cloud in the sky yesterday. It was a Chamber of Commerce day.
Right.
Or as those of us who are friends with Charles Barkley say, it's a this-why-we-live-here day. And so we had that yesterday, not a cloud in the sky. Went out and to the golf course a little bit, and 65 degrees. I don't know when the rain is coming, but it has to come because it's in L.A., as you mentioned, so it's got to get here.
So the waste management is this week, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is there any threat to that? Like, because Pebble washed out. Washed out.
I don't know how, the mountains that separate L.A. from us, it can get bad. Some of it often doesn't move over the mountains. It doesn't move east. It just kind of hangs there. But I don't know what that's going to be in this case. Nobody knows yet, but it's just sad that last year the weather for the Open was brilliant, and this year the weather is promising for 3 days to be dreadful.
Okay. It's a tough weekend for me. I don't know about you, because you concentrate on the NBA, and you are entertained by the NBA. It's a tough weekend for me because I couldn't watch the NHL All-Star Game. It had no meaning to me whatsoever because of the format. I understand why they stopped the Pro Bowl. They shouldn't have a Pro Bowl. You can't have a game that doesn't matter at all. And I applaud what they've done, but I had no interest in it. I had no interest in these flag football games or skills competition. I just had no interest.
Zero.
And I just wondered if you felt the same way. I just had nothing.
No, I don't have nothing. I got a whole league of sports that you used to cover, but you have now decided aren't worth your time for the 90% of the season. I have not decided that.
Right.
I've decided quite the opposite.
Right.
So, no, I got plenty of basketball to watch. I did not. I decided yesterday on the first Sunday with no football since August to, have life. So I was glad. It's like, enough. And I'm not going to sit there and try to make it a thing to watch this stuff that's on. In America, if you just have football players just walk into a room, 13 million people will sit there and watch. And so that's them. They can do that. I'm not doing that. And I didn't watch anything yesterday. I don't even know what the NBA results were. That's because I didn't watch. But I'll be back into it today. Tonight is seems like a 15-game night. Not 15, because that would be all 30 teams. But it's something like that. And there's some games. These are the dog days of the NBA in that people are tired. They've played 50 games already. They're trying to limp to the All-Star break, which is in 2 weeks. But in the meantime, the difference is you can get scorched. You can lose your season. There are too many good teams. You can lose your season. I don't mean if you're the Celtics or the Knicks and you lose to the Lakers because you're not paying attention. And the Lakers may just be getting better. But you can drop two or three spots and be done by the time the All-Star break actually is over. So it's a different season for the NBA to have this many teams who think they can actually win. And so, yes, I'm very entertained by it.
So I'll tell you my only appointment viewing. And it wasn't Pebble, though I had Pebble on. Yesterday, I did watch the Saudi tour and all of that. But my one appointment viewing this weekend was Saturday night to watch Caitlin Clark in Maryland.
Good, good.
And I watched it. I watched half. I watched the first half of it. And then, I'd had enough at that point. But I in watching her, she'll throw it up from anywhere. Yeah. She's a hit and miss. But and I said this in a text to a friend of mine. I said, it's possible. You would think that she throws it up so far and so often that her teammates might not like her. She's the best passer I've ever seen in women's basketball, and she wants to pass the ball. And her assist level is extraordinary to me, and she'll take it on the ground, go between her legs, and get to the basket better than anybody I can remember. Am I crazy on this?
Are you crazy? Do you see the lines of people watching her?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then, no. And so let me just say this. And this is my comment on both Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Juju, who I was in.
Yeah, the USC girl.
She had
51 the other
day. She's unbelievable. Yeah. She's unbelievably great. Let me just say this. And I know you guys had Billis on, and I defer to Jay Billis on all matters college basketball, because Jay Billis, you know, he doesn't know it. He feels it. This is not a one-off. Men's college basketball is in trouble. And I did some talk. You and I had this conversation on the phone 2 days
we
ago.
We did.
And after that, I talked to some people who are involved in the basketball industry. And they're with me. They're like, no. This is not a one-off. Nobody cared about men's college basketball last year either. And you can say it was because of Wembanyama. Well, this year, the two people that a lot of people think will go early in the draft, 1-2, are both French. And so you don't, Tony, here's the problem. You don't know who the guys are. You don't know who they are. They're there for a minute and a half, and even the minute and a half they're in college, they may change schools twice. There's a move afoot to allow kids to transfer and not just once go to the portal once, but as many times as they want. And so you had a Duke Carolina game on tonight that used to stop the world.
Yes.
ESPN was largely built on the strength of Duke Carolina.
And also Ohio State Michigan, but yes, I agree. I agree with that.
Duke Carolina basketball.
Right.
Ohio State Michigan wasn't on ESPN. It was on CBS.
Oh, well, then I'm wrong about that. No, certainly, certainly, yeah. Certainly you're right about Duke and Carolina, and then in the early days, of course, the Big East. Of course.
Yes, Big East, Big Monday.
Yes.
Tony, I got to my hotel in L.A. on Saturday. And look, it's people to remind people, they associate us with certain stuff now. We earned our livings and built reputations to no small degree on our ability to cover college basketball.
100%.
We both started there, and we spent no small amount of time there.
100%.
Tony, I got to my hotel room, and there were 9 games on live. 9. Take out Northwestern and take out Purdue, because I've watched them in person play against us so many times in play period. So that means there's 8 games worth. There's 16 teams. I don't know a player, Tony.
I agree.
I don't know a player on UConn St. John's. And I'm watching. I would have gone to the Garden. I went to the Garden a half dozen times in my life. Sometimes if I was just in New York City, I'd go to New York St. John's in the afternoon and then go see Bird versus Bernard King at night. There's no one I know in the damn games. Don't tell me this is a one-off. It's not a one-off, because I'm not going to know anybody next year either. And so Caitlin Clark is college basketball. Angel Reese is college basketball. Juju is college basketball. That's the deal. Because the men, Tony, so I talked to somebody last night, specific phone call, and I said to a CBS executive, and I said, what's your fear about what you're going to find out? And this person said that Caitlin Clark may have, and it's not about, the fear is not that women's basketball is great. The fear is that what it means about men's college basketball, that Caitlin Clark may have outdrawn all of them. Tony, she outdrew Celtic somebody last week.
No, she's,
okay? And the NBA is going to do its thing in April when it's time to do its thing. Tony, men's college basketball. So let me ask you this. If we don't know who plays in early February, why the hell are we going to know in March?
Mike, last year,
what happened to the tournament?
Last year when UConn won, I didn't know a single person. They won it.
Yeah.
They went through the season. They didn't lose any games outside of the Big East.
Mm-hmm.
Extraordinary. I couldn't name any player on that team. And in terms of Caitlin Clark, and it always comes around to this, and people get angry when we say this, if you can stay in college, you stay one more year, because the amount of money you're going to make from Iowa alone, what you not only that, you should petition the WNBA to put a team in Des Moines.
Yeah, she might get lucky and play in Indiana,
you know,
which is neighboring, and therefore her popularity can remain at a level. But
there are people lined up around the block outdoors in the winter.
Twice in a week in Chicago and Washington, D.C., okay? Not L.A. So you've got a situation where celebrating her is great because she's worth watching even if men's college basketball was roaring. She's worth watching.
She is.
But, Tony, I don't know. The only reason I know, here's what I do now. If there's a player who has a game I'm watching, and I'm trying to watch, I'm trying to, I call Matthew and I go, have I seen this kid before? Yeah, Dad, we played against him in AAU. And he'll know the kid. He'll call me and say, Dad, you watching Rob Dillingham? I go, what? He's the kid who scored 35 for Kentucky. So I will have seen some of these kids myself over the last couple of years at an AAU game where I'm there. But, Tony, I don't know them in college. All I know is the coaches. I know Kelvin Sampson. I don't know a single player on Houston, which is really good. So what's the value of March? What is it? What's it going to be?
I don't know. We're going to see.
I'm not saying it's going to hollow out this year. But, Tony, don't tell me that the tournament is not in trouble. That men's college basketball, once again, the only guy we're going to know going to the NBA is a Frenchman 2 years in a row. Don't tell me this is good for college basketball. It isn't. College basketball is, but on the men's side, is in trouble.
I think you're right. I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
All right, Tony.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we'll take a break. Barry Svrluga will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Ali Farris, sent to us by our dear friend Michael Granberry, who sends us the best talent in the world, and writes in the conclusion of his letter, we had lost touch with Ali until recently when she wrote me, filled me in on her life. She has a beautiful two-year-old daughter named Lily Rose. Lily Rose and her mom and dad live with their two dogs in Schwarzenberg, Lucerne, Switzerland. As Ali puts it, out among the cows and sheep with my piano and notebooks. I love it. Not long ago, Ali gave birth to our second child, whose name is Orson. Like Wells, she says, and is now excited at the prospect of having her songs played on this particular show. She's given her permission.
From Lucerne.
Yeah.
Maybe she could help with the...
Large curd?
Yes.
I would hope so. 4% milk fat. This is called Losing All Control. Michael, if people like Ali Farris want to send in their original music, how do they do so?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And she plays in Barry's Svrluga. There's a million things to talk to Barry about in the Washington, greater Washington metropolitan area. And I'm going to start with something that has angered me beyond words. It just angers me. I saw it again yesterday or the day before. The Washington Wizards, who are about to leave Washington, D.C., and you can say, okay, they're only going to go a couple of miles away. It's not the point. They're walking out on the nation's capital. They're wearing these uniforms that say District of Columbia. They're playing on a court that says the District. I can't tell you, Barry, how much this angers me. Am I being crazy about this?
No, you and I are in the same boat, Tony. And I think part of that is, I think the whole time that we kind of relocated here, and that for you is longer than me, but for me is still 20 years, we've lived in the district that means something here, that arena means something to that neighborhood, to the city. And it is really ironic and kind of cruelly ironic that the Wizards, you know, who are terrible,
they stink,
kind of started this campaign and anchored this season in this whole boundary stone, we are the district, kind of motif, all the while their owner, Ted Leonsis, is plotting to move the team and the hockey team across the river to Alexandria. I would say, Tony, that and I think we talked about this before, these plans are in place and they are real. We are at the beginning of this process, not the middle or the end. It is not a done deal that they are gone. I think there's a lot of things that are going to have to happen in Virginia to get this approved. You know, there are legislators in southwestern Virginia or down in the Tidewater area that, you know, they don't really care to spend money to move to build an arena and an entertainment district in northern Virginia. So that said, I'm with you. And if we're both crazy, at least we're crazy together.
Yeah, it's sheer villainy. And to wrap yourself in the flag in the sense that your logo is the Washington Monument when you've announced you're leaving is total villainy. I'll get off that for a second. The big news in Washington is the hiring of Dan Quinn, defensive coordinator. It's not, to me, it's a lead balloon of a hire. Now, he may turn out to be great, and I'll be wrong. But my sense was if you're going to go defense, which, of course, I wouldn't do when you have the number two draft pick and you need a quarterback, why wouldn't you hire Mike Vrabel, who appears to have been, at his one stop, a better coach, seemed to me anyway, than Dan Quinn at his one stop. I don't think you hated Dan Quinn, but I'm quite certain you wanted an offensive guy.
1,000%. I mean, I just don't think you get a chance to line things up like they have things lined up. I mean, they have a fresh start with a new owner. They have a general manager for the first time in a generation. You get a chance to hire a coach who helps you make the second pick in the draft, who will be a quarterback around which you have to build your roster. You're in the position to build a roster around a quarterback and on a rookie deal. You have cap space to fill out all the other needs that you have. It just seems like the head of that operation in terms of in the locker room and on the field should be an offensive guy, because this is among the reasons why it should have been gone that way, in my opinion. If you hire a young offensive coordinator, and it looks like they're hiring Cliff Kingsbury,
yeah,
who's not young, I guess, not old, certainly, but if that person develops the quarterback, that number two pick, successfully, like Bobby Slowick did with C.J. Stroud in Houston, that guy's not going to be around very long because he's going to get a head job someplace else. So if you hire the offensive guy and he develops the number two quarterback, all you're doing is extending him for yourselves. So that's not a commentary on Dan Quinn, who I think is like, meh, like, okay, mm-hmm, fine. I agree with you on the Vrabel point. Like, don't you at least talk to Vrabel if you're going to hire Quinn to have a comparison? He had a better record in Tennessee. And I would also point out, like, when they introduced Dan Quinn in Ashburn today, they certainly will say this guy has taken a team to a Super Bowl. Well, when he took a team to a Super Bowl, Kyle Shanahan was his offensive coordinator, and Matt Ryan was the MVP of the league, and they led the league in offense in basically every category. Kyle Shanahan walks out the door to San Francisco, where he's taken his second team to a Super Bowl now, and Dan Quinn goes 7-9, 7-9, 0-5, and gets fired. So I don't think this, maybe it'll work out. It is a blah hire at best to me, and I think at a time to hire a retread when everything else around here feels so fresh is surprising to me.
I can't approve on that. I'm not going to even try. Did the Orioles sale surprise you?
No, I could, which is not to say that I was like, oh yeah, you know, last Wednesday or whatever, the Angelos family is going to sell. I do think it's kind of been coming. Peter Angelos is in poor health. the family has had a bunch of infighting, and the Orioles are at kind of a crucial point in their development. I would say, Tony, if you were dropped from outer space and plopped down in the United States and were told you should pick one of 30 Major League Baseball teams to be a fan of in 2024, I might pick the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah.
And it's because of what they have on the field and what they just did in winning 101 games with this really young, exciting core. But it's also because this new ownership situation with David Rubenstein, who, I mean, people might not know nationally, but man, is he a big, big Washington, D.C. philanthropist and, you know, started the Carlyle Group and is worth, you know, bazillion dollars. But he is a Baltimore native. And all through this process, when he kind of, you know, flirted with Ted Leonsis and trying in an attempt to try to buy the Nationals, I was told that, man, if David, if the Orioles become available, David would really, really, really jump on that. So I think you have somebody with very, very deep pockets, just a huge love for the city of Baltimore. And it, much like when the Washington NFL team was sold, a feeling in the fan base that, you know, anybody but Angelos at this point, because he was not going to spend, they were not going to spend. I think that's going to change now for Baltimore. It's just a sea change over there.
Yeah, I agree. I just wish he'd bought the Nationals, because he was born there, but he lives here now. This leaves Ted Leonsis, who I accused of villainy about 10 minutes ago, and stand by that, because he's taking two teams out of Washington, D.C. for reasons that have to do solely with money. This leaves him as a bidder for the Washington Nationals. I would be reluctant to sell to him, because I would think he would move the team to Virginia. I would be very reluctant to sell. Is that a foolish position?
Foolish, maybe no. It doesn't jump to the front of mind for me. I mean, I don't think the Lerner family, who has owned the Nationals since they bought them from Major League Baseball in 2000, sale was completed in 2006, I think they don't care who the buyer is if the buyer meets their price, whatever their price is. They are, I think we've probably talked about this before, they're not concerned what the market would say the Nationals are worth. They establish their own market. And if they determine that their team is worth X and you offer X minus one, you're not going to get the team. So the equation is, does Ted Leonsis meet the Lerner's price, whatever that is? And I do think there is a tie to what we just talked about in the sale of the Orioles, because people here locally know that the TV rights for the Nationals are tied up and controlled by the Orioles, and that has kind of hung over this franchise for the entirety of its existence. Leonsis and Rubenstein are friendly, have worked together on many different things. There's a, you know, a line of thinking that when Rubenstein buys the Orioles, there's a, and if Leonsis buys the Nationals, there's a way that they could solve that television rights problem, just because they have a working relationship that the Lerner family and the Angelos family did not. Those are two extremely litigious groups who were digging their heels. So there's a path here that, you know, there could be solutions all over the place for these two franchises if those buyers and those sales go through. We're closer on the Baltimore side than we are on the Washington side, although I think we'll see some movement over the course of this season.
That makes all the sense in the world. I would still be afraid of taking the team and going somewhere else. I would be afraid of that. The Wizards, the aforementioned Wizards, stink beyond caring. I mean, they fired a coach last week, and nobody cared. And there was no, honestly, there was no commentary. There was nothing. They fired a coach. They continue to lose all the time. They really should lower ticket prices. If they're going to put this product out there, they should lower ticket prices. Have you gotten a letter to indicate they're going to lower ticket prices? I haven't. I'm just wondering. Maybe it missed me and you got it.
No, you know, it's funny. The postman just walked by and he didn't have it for me. But, I had a buddy who had a family member in from out of town who was a big NBA fan and wanted to go last Friday night. And they spent $35 on 400 level seats to see this group, which is criminal, it seems like to me. There should be $15 tickets to get in.
Plus food. $15 plus food
all
if
you
show
eat.
Up.
Right, sure, right, yeah. Exactly. Or if you paid me $15 to go, perhaps. maybe it works that way. I do agree with you, Tony, and we talked a little bit by text about this. I am a sports columnist in Washington, D.C., and Wes Unseld Jr. gets fired, and in 90% of NBA cities, the sports columnist in town was like, well, they fired the coach. Like, this is like, if it's not like a 3-alarm fire, you're certainly like sitting down and typing. And it barely changes my pulse. Like, they don't, they don't register right now. They are not relevant. And we know now, Tony, how much stuff gets read based on subject, because we know what the clicks are, and it's just the Wizards are a wasteland.
They're not there. No one cares.
Of interest. So they might be doing the right thing in stripping it down. And I do think it's better than, going halfway with Bradley Beal and paying him all that money just to win 35 games and not make the playoffs. Like, that was not a good plan. But if they're going to build it back up, this is the painful part when if the people who do care have to watch just terrible basketball, and the reality is there's not a lot of those people who do care at all anyway. So these are rough times for that franchise.
Surprised me. It really did when Matt Rennie told me there are no clicks. You know, that nobody seems to care. They're almost irrelevant at this point. I was surprised and disheartened. And again, I mean, to me, bring people in there. Offer really cheap seats, offer something, but then the ownership has said, no, we're moving. We don't care about you. We don't care. We're moving anyway. So disheartening, right? You would understand that if you're a fan. Disheartening.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. I think the point is, the move almost doesn't matter for that franchise, because what fan base are you alienating? It's so small and expects so little. Like, I'm with you on the move. I think it's criminal, but I think there's a there could be a marketing executive who thinks, well, who cares if we're bad? When we get to Virginia, we're going to be on the ascent and we're going to be selling a completely different product to a completely different fan base.
Yeah.
I'm not endorsing that as an approach, but I can see suits thinking that way.
That's fine. Just when you get out there, don't wear a uniform that has the Washington Monument on it. Don't. Unless you have somebody in the logo with binoculars looking at the Washington Monument from across the river. Thank you, Barry.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
Barry Svrluga does a wonderful job for the Washington Post. We'll take a break, email, and jingle. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. He got your emails, faxes, and your notes. He's gonna read some mail for all you folks.
Tom Goddard's lovely. I really, really like it.
Isn't that great?
I really, really like it. I do. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the DC area nearest you. Then pop on in, my friend, and you'll be thrilled, especially if you get the bagel sandwiches like we did today.
That'll just about do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me say, close your eyes and I'll kiss you tomorrow. I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always be true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day and I'll send all my love to you. Excuse me. Today is February 5th. On February 7th will be the 60th anniversary of the Beatles flying into New York City at what was then called Idlewild Airport, populated at that time by one Mr. Douglas Hegel, an assistant principal at George W. Hewlett High School, where he was met by students from George W. Hewlett High School leaving school early in order to see the Beatles land and screaming at him, "Hegel is a beagle," as he took their names down to suspend them. I will say no more. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon and Barry Zwerluga. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. Okay. We're going to do the most recent emails because I left the other ones in a different room. This is from Joe Antal in Venice, Florida. "I thoroughly enjoyed all the worst songs of all time emails you've been reading. When you segued into Most Beautiful, I was moved to submit a song that for me has lasted a lifetime. I first heard The Shadow of Your Smile. It's a beautiful song. Watching The Sandpiper as a teenager, I loved it then and still do. I remember singing it to the woman to whom I'm now related by marriage when we slow danced at our wedding party. I'm willing to bet that with your amazing memory for lyrics, you can finish the famous verse that follows, 'The Shadow of Your Smile When You Are Gone.'" Look, this is a beautiful, beautiful song, The Shadow of Your Smile. It's a little syrupy, I'll grant you, but it's a beautiful song. From George in Philadelphia. "First concert I ever went to was an early 2000s reunion of Simon and Garfunkel in Philadelphia with my high school sweetheart. The stadium was packed to the rafters. They opened for themselves and, of course, brought the house down. The reason for there being no opening act was their special guests were none other than the Everly Brothers, who came out mid-show to sing some of their greatest hits alongside the aforementioned Simon and Garfunkel. They closed with Bridge Over Troubled Water, and it was the most emotionally charged environment I've ever been in. At the very end, I turned to give my girlfriend a hug and a kiss, getting caught up in the moment unlike any other, completely forgetting on the other side of her was our ride home, who also happened to be her mother. Let's just say she was not amused. But we will always have that concert. Me, Simon, Art, Phil, Don, my girlfriend, and her mom." That's a great email. From Dan Smith in Middleton, Ohio. "I'm just curious, does the guy that zips your coats up for you have to work overtime when you decide to break out the sleeping pants, or does he have an assistant take care of that stuff for him? I think you're getting ripped off by some salesman with these sleeping pants names. When you go to the nail store, do they convince you to buy a left-handed screwdriver and a right-handed screwdriver in case one hand gets tired? The only question you should be asking before you pay is, do these come in orange?" It's great email. Carla Corrado, our old friend at Columbus, Ohio. "Inappropriately, at my university, some students shuffle into morning classes wearing their pajama bottoms and fuzzy slippers. This semester, I made it mandatory that they wear, you know, pants and shoes to class. Call me crazy. After class Wednesday, I called aside an improperly attired student to remind him that the pajamas are frowned upon in an establishment. He looked annoyed and then responded, 'Why? Right, that's why I'm wearing sleep pants. After hearing your Nautica situation, I did not challenge it. Please tell David Merkowitz, who teaches history across the hall, to eat it.'" Professor of sociology, I assume, at Ohio State.
No, but she's at Audubon.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, which is just down the road.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Steve LePoe, Denver. "Sleeping pants? Sleeping pants, you 200 years old? Did you grow up in a Charles Dickens novel? I think the word you're looking for is pajamas, Grandpa." Mark Hughes writes, "Dear Mr. Tony, I've been eating pizza in Rehoboth for 6 decades. I was stunned you gave a Rehoboth pizza story and it didn't refer to one of the holy trinity of Rehoboth pizza joints, which would be, of course, Grotto, Nicola, and Louis. All fine, but I like Casa de Leo. Friendships have been broken in arguments over which of these three is the best. Are you now throwing a fourth name into the ring? This is big news for Rehoboth pizza lovers. As George Costanza said, worlds are colliding here, Jerry." This is from Mark Hughes in Ashton, Maryland, Chuck and Roxy, episode 292. Michael, you've eaten at all of the others at Grotto, Nicola. Grotto's just the most famous.
They're
Nicola
different.
Lewis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Grotto is the signature one.
Yes, and if that's sort of that is a beach experience you should try, but it's a sweeter sauce.
Yeah,
yes.
Just like you have to try the French fries. What are the French fries?
Thrashers.
Thrashers. You have to have them.
Sure.
But, I mean, I'm just telling you that Casa de Leo is where I like the best. From Joe in Orlando, Florida.
No, Nico Boli here.
Yeah, and they have Nicolas. They're out on the highway now. Joe in Orlando, Florida. One night last week, as I was watching Jeopardy, the $2,000 clue given in a category titled Bald is Beautiful was a picture of none other than James Carville, along with some detail about his political career. As a contestant rang in with the correct response, I realized I listened to the show way too much when I was surprised the entire exchange didn't go like this. Contestant, who is James Carville? Ken Jennings, James Carville. Contestant, who? Ken, NFL game picker, TK podcast, contestant, oh. Greg Archibald, Los Alamos. Whoa, New Mexico, that's where the bomb.
Yeah, that's where they made that.
About Wilbon, I'm going to need to see the analytics on rooting for a rival. Jim Johnson, JJ, Laura Little, number 241 for Chuck and Roxy, I guess from Chattanooga. While listening to Thursday's show, I had my own David Aldridge moment. Well, sort of. When you read Nathan's email about YKK Zippers, I thought, I know that company. I designed the building structure for their manufacturing facility in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky in the early 90s. To sort of make it a double David Aldridge moment, I used to go to church with a man, the very rich man, that created the zipper manufacturing machines used at YKK and most of the other zipper manufacturers in the rest of the world. If it's not taken, can I be the structural engineer of the Tony Kornheiser Show? We could have used you. Kevin Bench, The Hills, Texas. My father-in-law is a farmer from a small town, population 500-plus, named Turkey, Texas. Not a typo. About 20 years ago, he came to visit his little girl in Austin, Texas. He needed some new shoes, so we went to one of the major stores in the mall. I think it was Dillard's or Nordstrom's or something like that. He found a pair of loafers that he liked that were priced at $120. He said to the salesman, I like these. I'll give you $200 for two pair. I was mortified, then stunned, when the salesman said, you've got a deal. Wait, what? What? Now he haggles everywhere. Gas stations, restaurants, banks. It's unbelievable. What are we even doing here? From Will Calicott. Aiken, South Carolina. Lovely little town. Lots of golf courses around there. Pretty near Augusta. About an hour.
On the way, yeah.
You know, almost. Probably it's an hour closer. Or is it closer? Dear Mr. Tony, I'm going to make an educated guess that you are not familiar with the particulars of how podcast apps actually work. Of course. I've never listened to a podcast. When I open my app to listen to your show, Spotify in my case, the app suggests to me other podcasts you might like based on my listening habits. Those other podcasts appear as a list of cover art, similar to the cover of a book or an album. Imagine my delight when Spotify recently suggested to me a podcast whose cover simply read, T-Boy. What luck, I thought. A straight line to Carville's guy. I can kill it now, from now on an obscure Southland Conference matchups and Patriot League over-unders. Sadly, T-Boy turned out to be an acronym for the best one yet, a pop culture podcast that had no insight into McNeese State plus 7.5. Come on, man. What are we even doing out here? And from Bill Isaacson. I did some follow-up on your phrase, that's it, that's the list. There's an actual website on Quotable Quotes that credits that phrase to you. Wow.
There you go.
I guess you had that. Yeah. Okay. You guys are stealing it in a rival publication. What you don't know, I think, is that your phrase has been updated. And on Twitter, the common phrase is, that's it, that's the tweet. Internet history traces this Twitter back to 2010 when at Jeremy Sandwich tweeted, there's a rough family living two doors down. That's it. That's the tweet. Now the phrase is repeated on Twitter, or X as it is now called, constantly. An email with all the tweets using the phrase in just 1 hour before this email would fill many pages. But to give you a sample from that hour, Slinky Dinky, that's it, that's the tweet. Tom Hiddleston is so beautiful, that's it, that's the tweet. Dracul Myhawk's hat hair, that's it, that's the tweet. Tony, it's all part of your legacy now, added to the Hoff-Woff. Bill Isaacson. That's wonderful.
So you're
out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always. Do wear white.
What does Argo mean?
I don't know.
You don't know?
It means Argo f*** yourself.
Jenny's got blonde hair just like me. It falls in her face every night when she sleeps. Jenny's got a big mouth and big teeth. She remembers how the cool kids always so mean. But it doesn't take much to make her smile. She could swallow all the pain, but that ain't her style. It's all in all a good night. When Jenny sets her sights on feeling lucky, she doesn't have to be.
Together, won't you ever learn? You're stuck up in your ivory tower watching bridges burn. Won't you ever learn? Won't you ever learn? Na, 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 na. Wake up, girl, take a look around you, look at all you have. You say your life's a mess, but it ain't all that bad. Look at all you have.
Losing all control.